And welcome to Dark Guidance. I'm Chris.
I'm Brian.
And I'm Arian.
And today we're going to take a break from talking about War Machine and CIDs and trolls and how trolls might actually be playable and how troll players might not know what to do with this said playability, and instead talk about a different game from Privateer Press, one we've been playing on and off for a bit in the background. What was that, sorry?
Mostly on.
Mostly on. Oh, your case on. My case off. And in both cases, actually quite enjoying it. Warcaster.
Yeah. So far it's impressed. I've been very impressed as well. I was always interested in Warcaster as soon as they originally came out and they were like, you know, we're going to do 40K and Warhammer Fantasy 40K. We're going to make Privateer Press games in space. And I'm like, I love games in space. And I was always
Space Marines are in space.
I like Space Marines.
Hey, it's a real good thing I like the Tau, right? Right?
Yep.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
No one likes Tau players, not even Tau players.
I remember everyone was a lot more worried about the game than I was. I don't know, maybe I was just on a full...
No, that's fair. Well, I mean, like, the initial announcement was basically, I remember seeing it on night shift coming home. I'm like, this is like a nothing announcement. It's just like, okay, it's some new game. It's called Warcaster. It has like something, some focus mechanic that you allocate focus to squads now. Like, okay. So, because you see it through the context of like, how the original game War Machine worked, right? Well, yeah.
I mean,
I could pinpoint. Yeah, sorry.
I was there live, and it was not much of a. It was not an impressive show.
No, I imagine.
It was like, here's our new game, and you're like, okay, and they're like, yeah, and you're like,
that's all, folks.
okay. Yeah. War Machine in space, but not really. Okay, But I was very much more impressed with the next thing they showed.
Yeah, I think we can all pinpoint the exact moment where it transformed to a lol, yeah, all right point into like, oh, this game actually has legs. And it was specifically the first time they fucking did a preview demo game on stream. Like, it was Will Hungerford versus Will Oz. It was ISA versus Marches. And they're like watching the game, it's like, oh, wow, this is actually fucking sick.
Yeah, it's sort of like it was really impressive the way that they noted the things that kind of is core to War Machine. The fact that like the winning is generally about attrition or assassination, and like we're going to make a game which doesn't really include either of these. Attrition to an extent, but like not anywhere close to the same way.
Yeah.
Which is really interesting. It means they were very conscious in making a game which was not trying to be War Machine in space.
Yeah, it's actually one of the things is, I think Warcaster very specifically subverts a lot of not just War Machine expectations, but just, like, gaming expectations at all. Namely, it's the, like, Fate Stay Night thing. Did you know that in Warcaster, people don't die when they are killed? In fact, sometimes they don't even die at all. They just, like, immediately pop back in.
Yeah, I always get this horrible feeling of like being on the other side of that portal and watching squads run out through it and then horrible screaming and blood, and then the instructor's like, "All right, you're up next."
Oh my god.
Yeah. So the fact is that it's such an interesting game mechanic when like, no, you're just going to bring everything back. There's not many games that have explored something close to this gaming space, and the closest one I can think of off the top of my head's Modern Pop.
Yeah, a little, actually. So I was going to say, for the benefit of everyone, we should sort of get into just how Warcaster actually works and, like, this thing of just, like, people don't die when they're killed. Ooh.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think the best thing we can do, though, like, if you want to know how Warcaster works, go watch that first playthrough, because literally everyone who watched it, like, everyone who I talked to who got interested in Warcaster said it was that playthrough that really turned them on.
Yep.
Yeah. It was a but unique gaming experience you haven't seen really before.
Yeah, and not like just a unique gaming experience where we tell you about it and then all of a sudden we have to like, you know, close up shop and discontinue our game and say, oh, I guess we didn't kill War Machine after all. No. Like, the whole point of Warcaster is it is actually quite unique to play. So Warcaster basically is you're not an actual Warcaster on the battlefield, you're the guy in space. And The game involves a good chunk of you using your Arcanus. We'll just call
Arcanescence.
Arcanescence, that's it. But basically, it's just Arc, and it's resource management in that perspective. But what sets it apart is just how models are deployed on the field, in the sense that they just clown car out of these gates. And a good chunk of the game is basically correctly deploying gates and then having the right stuff come out for the job. Because
you get this really cool feeling when, like, you start the game, no matter what size game it is, you start with, like, two to five guys on the table. And as the game goes on, you are bringing your entire damn army out onto the field and then watching as parts of it get killed. And then you're trying to correctly identify what the parts of the army that I need right now to really help me get going and where do I put it on the table.
It also changes list building, because, like, when you build list building in almost any game, War Machine included, list building is all about all of the shit you can put on the table, right? You're putting, like, when you put your list down, you're putting every model in that list on the table. So all of them kind of have to be useful. It's like one of our core concepts in here in Dark Guidance is War Machine Libertarianism. Support. Cut support. Because do you want, you know, that support guy could be a guy with a gun, right? Maybe it could be two guys with guns for the price of that one guy. But Warcaster is a little different because it's not like it's not like just a set, like, menu you're just bringing out. You basically get to pick and choose what models are coming out and what. You can take multiple Warjacks knowing you'll only ever deploy, like, say, one Duskwolf or one Heavy, but you have two very distinct uses for them against different factions or different comps.
Last night I took a list which had three I faced Brian. I was playing my ISA versus his March of Worlds. I had a list which included three lights. I deployed one light, and I actually never activated it.
Yeah, he just walked around the table getting shot at and never dying.
He was so cool.
I can't even guess which light it was. It was the fucking two shield, like, reflex cortex light, right?
Chris, how could you...
Every light he brings has reflex cortexes. Yeah. That's the trick. They're super irritating.
Yeah.
Oh. But yeah, the fact is that's what, like, the biggest deal about it is that you're building your you've got your list, but you're actually building your army on the table as you go, which is super cool and super interesting. The other thing is also that Warcaster, so War Machines' basic conceit originally was that you'd bring your army, but the core is going to be guys that your leader can buff. And they've done that to pretty much everything. Now, Arc Essence is you allocate it every turn, and it's a much, much slower process, unless you play certain factions or cards. But its effect is hugely magnified. And the fact is that it's not just that you're getting Arc Essence and you're allocating it to your squads or your solos or your warjacks, but also that they get innate benefits for having it, but then their rules, they'll often have rules about having Arc on them or kicking it off themselves by spiking, which will give them additional rules as well. And you get benefits for having more Arc off the table sometimes, because when you cast attack spells, having more Arc off the table is better, but that means that your troops on the table are have less rules. It's a really interesting, like, the resource allocation, which I feel sometimes gets a little lost in War Machine, when often you have hyper efficient models, especially on the Horde side. But the resource allocation is so hard, because you have seven Arc and that's it. You can't increase the amount of Arc. It's really hard to find ways of getting it onto the table faster, and you're always making decisions with it. The amount of Arc is always a give and take, which is really interesting.
I actually really like this part of the game too, because I find it's not about resource allocation. It's more about resource flow. Like, you're allocating things in the interest of using and then spending it. Like, you're rarely storing stuff. It's like your Arc, you want your Arc as efficient as possible. So, like, a lot of times you'll be going around basically activating squads you've allocated to deliberately to get the Arc off of them, so that then you can cast a nuke spell, and then when it comes time to deploy gates late in the turn, you can throw out more gates, like more guys on a gate.
But when you get Arc onto something which is powerful, like a Heavy, like the feeling of heavies in Warcaster is so much better than heavies in War Machine because they feel monstrous. When you get a heavy going, they are just this unstoppable brute that annihilates everything that comes in their path. But the balancing factor is that getting the heavy to that point means that, like, you have 7R, you've allocated 3 to that heavy. It's often taken a couple of turns or some tricky other plays, and that's half your resources gone.
Yeah.
They're stuck on that heavy now.
That means other models aren't being as effective, your spells aren't as effective, and you can bring less models onto the table. Because Arc pretty much does everything for you in the game.
It's also the funny thing where it's just like, wow, your heavy is killing literally everything in my army. What a fucking idiot. What a stupid guy. Because
you can table someone and they don't lose.
Yeah, because that's not the point of the game, really. I mean, there's sort of a mercy rule, but, like, actually, practically speaking, it's so hard to mercy someone. No, the reason why they're such an idiot is that heavy is literally one spot on the table, and they just run to, like, the other corner of the table, just steal all the scenario points somehow, and you're just like, aww.
That literally happened to me yesterday. I was able to mitigate that somewhat, but, yeah, my heavy was in one corner of the table, and then the rest of the table was just like, yeah, okay, you can stay over there. It's fine.
But then Brian did the correct thing and pulled the heavy off the table, because not only can you summon models, but you can also choose to bring them off the table, which to give you a more advantageous place to put them, which is really interesting. And so he pulled his heavy off and appeared elsewhere.
So I'm going to say my two bits about basically Warcaster. Namely, I think someone at Privateer Press, they could correct me or not on this particular matter, but I think someone at Privateer Press really likes Titanfall, because this game, of all the, like, tabletop games I've ever played, this one feels basically like an FPS, because you've got guys constantly dying and respawning, it's all about control points and tickets and shit like that, and a lot of times it comes down to, like, if anyone's ever played Titanfall, the whole point of the game is, like, you have, like, all these NPC guys running around, basically just being chaff, kind of like squads in Warcaster, almost, and a lot of them, their purpose is basically to, like, power you up to the point where you can summon one of your titans. Like, say, a heavy warjack. It is not exactly a perfect comparison, but, again, like, the way this game works feels different because of, you've got, like, constantly switching parts of the board. Like, when you play War Machine, your side of the table where you're physically standing on is basically your side. The amount of times your enemy models get in, well, like, it's basically what, like, when Brian's trying to kill your Bart by running, like, Sorsha around the table to try and get there, or when, like, Greylord, like, you know, you use speed 10 models with sprint and sidestep and manage to get them behind your opponent's army. Like, that's the exceptional, like, they're exceptional outliers. Warcaster, completely different.
Yeah, the ability to drop gates is really, really there's a lot of freedom to it, especially in the faster factions like March of Worlds. And the fact is that table side, not hugely relevant.
Yes.
It's really about the areas that you control. And if you can, and because gates can only be deployed by warrior models, it means that often you are going to start really thinking about, like, Can I annihilate someone off this quadrant of the table?
Yeah, well, that was just local superiority, basically.
Yeah, that's what I tried to do last night.
Yeah, so in our game yesterday, I felt like you were making a lot better use of your squads, where my jacks were doing exactly what I wanted them to do, but then I realized partway through the game that because of the way the scenario went, the middle of the table became less relevant, and it was the extremities and the corners that became the relevant portions of scenario. And because of that, and I had hunkered down in the middle, was controlling that effectively with my jacks that could not die.
Oh, God damn it.
But then suddenly all my squads are in the corners controlling my side, but I had no warrior models in the middle of the table or farther up to actually start contesting yours, where you had been very aggressive with your warrior models and were able to actually put gates down near my scoring objectives, which put a lot more pressure on me, and I had to play to catch up.
Yeah, like, the way that I was playing that game was, I was essentially, like, by the end of the game, I was controlling my closest left flank and your right flank.
Yeah.
Like, I was controlling that horizontal line across the table.
Yeah.
Diagonal line across the table, sorry. Which is not something that usually happens in most war games. Usually you're very married to your side of the table.
Yeah, it's a much more of a, because this game is more of a skirmish game, even though you play it on a War Machine sized table, that is a much more skirmishy kind of thing that you see only in games like Malifaux and maybe Infinity.
Yeah, and even then, not all the time.
No, it depends on the faction you play. You have to be fairly mobile. Whereas in Warcaster, the game itself is a mobile game.
Correct.
Like, everybody's capable.
And everything that we've been talking about, we haven't even mentioned cipher cards.
Yeah, I was going to say, because those are like very different.
Ciphers are like a traditional thing, or like a traditional game design thing of like, here are the rules, and here are specifically how you break the rules. And that's what makes them interesting.
You build a deck of spells, essentially, that you keep five in your hand that you can play at the beginning and near the end of your turns. And then you can discard one, and then you can draw up to five at the end of your turn, or at the beginning of your next turn.
If anyone has played Chaos in the Old World, it is exactly how, like, Zench works. And it's basically the same thing. It's like, you want to cycle spells as needed. You're like, I like what a lot of things they've done with the cipher cards. So for starters, it uses a lot of familiar mechanics, right? Like, honestly, the way ciphers work is extremely similar to how magic works. And the fact that you're not allowed duplicates of spells stops you going like, cool, I guess I make three of the most efficient attack spells, three of the, like, ascension catalyst, three of the one that does another thing, and three of the, like, buff spells, and we go to town. Like, fuck it, we'll skip all the infantry spells. No. You have to, you can only take one of each card, at least at present, and the cards themselves are all subtly different. Like, there's only so few things. Like, Ascension Catalyst is, like, one of the best ones, I think. It's the one that allows your Warjack to fly. Now, if you think about it, if a quarter of your deck is, like, your Warjack goes faster and flies, that's kind of boring game design, because you might as well just make all Warjacks in the game, plus two speed, fly, and while you're at it, just make them Gundams. Right? But, yeah.
The way that cipher cards are very limited, but still give you free reign, it's a really nice balance. I do think that I have some thoughts on cipher cards in general, but right now I'm still right now being forced to make some pretty rough choices at the start of the game when you're working out what cipher cards you're trying to put into your deck. And it's going to be really interesting when they come out with a tournament pack to see when you actually pick cipher cards. Is it part of list selection, or is it after you know your opponent?
Indeed.
It will be really, really interesting. And the fact is that cipher cards are also part of that arc dance because the Furies are so strong. Almost no attack in the game is as strong as the direct attacks that come out of your Weavers.
Yeah.
But the which are your kind of Warcaster spells. They're so powerful, but that means that you're taking all of your arc off the table. And everyone, I've seen at least once and multiple times, people going like, I'm taking every arc off the table to do a Super Saiyan attack. Like, I am going
Spirit Bomb.
For Super Saiyan. I mean, I'm Spirit Bombing them. You need to get that fucker off the objective, and the only way is a 7 Fury Force Hammer. Let's go.
Yeah.
Well, then you're rolling 11 dice. It's fucking insane.
Yeah, and it's 12 because you're slamming them into something.
Of course.
Yeah, and it's amazing when you're just like, oh yeah, I always forgot that I always have the option of just pulling all of my subtlety off the table and hitting them with the biggest attack I have.
Twice, half the time.
Sometimes, yes.
Sometimes twice. Actually, so thinking about it some more, one thing in War Machine is, like, when you think about it, a lot of the times your spells that you have on your caster's card, even if they're a warlock, so they're able to spend down more, well, they can't actually always use them, because a lot of the times you need those resources to keep yourself alive. Like, there's a reason we call them shitty nukes, right? Like, when you think about it, Stranglehold is actually, like, a fucking amazing spell, but Stranglehold's on your warcaster. If he dies, he loses the game. Well,
the reason that Stranglehold is good is not because of its power 11.
Yeah. it's because it's of its ability of just its random bullshit. But in Warcaster, it's different. Your Warcaster is basically in a battle cruiser orbiting the planet, right?
Yeah.
And you're able to go, all right, well, I guess I'll spend down to zero every turn, which means that all of a sudden, it's just like, I mean, surprise, surprise. Sometimes the game comes down to basically using the cryolock spell on your opponent's big ass heavy before they get to activate it so that they get fucked.
Yeah, so they can't activate it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think now. What's the name of that, is it Zhukov? The guy in StarCraft who was in the StarCraft story?
Stukov, that's it. Yeah.
Stukov is my Warcaster now.
All right.
That's cruiser operational.
I mean, he gets infested and is now a Zerg, but yeah, all right, go for it.
Yeah.
But
it's just
you're basically going like, again, like you can, that's all the one thing with the spells is like, because the spells are literally free, half the time you just play them anyway because you're like, well, I might as well because I'll just cycle through my deck. Hell, sometimes it's advantageous because once you run out of spells, you shuffle your deck again. You're like, well, fuck, I already used, like, say, one of the key spells. Again, we'll call it Ascension Catalyst, because half the time, that's one of the best spells in the game. And you're like, cool, I need Ascension Catalyst now. All right, nuke, buff, shuffle deck.
Nuke.
Yes.
All of these come together in a game which is just, like, everything you do is a tough decision. But, like, it's not a tough decision the same that War Machine is. It's a tough decision in that, like, everything is, you're a little bit dispassionate. You're not about necessarily about positioning your models perfectly, although there is quite a lot of that. It's about, like, taking a step back and realizing where your resources are going, what's worth spending stuff on and what isn't worth spending stuff on. What do you care if dies or not? And that is a very different feel and a very interesting one, especially for a sci-fi game, because it lends itself to that. War Machine feels very fantasy in a lot of ways because it's like it's blood, germs and steel. It's you're trying to empathize with the characters that are on the table, but you're playing a sci-fi game where you don't care that your people are dying because you have an infinite amount of people. Like,
you're literally just throwing them out the, what was it? You said it earlier, it's just like, they're opening a gate and you're just like, horrible screams are coming from the other side, like, your turn next, buddy.
Yeah. I really believe
Starship Troopers the game.
Yeah. I think I had the perfect words for this earlier, but basically it's like, you're right, it's still tough, but the decisions in Warcaster are much more forgiving and, like, long-term. The forgiving part is because when you make a bad decision in War Machine, oftentimes it can immediately cost you the game. When, you know, your bad decision being like, why you put her there? I just kill her.
Yeah.
Right? And then that's it. You're just like, and then you become a long-standing ream about how well do you know this game. Right? Mm-hmm. Well, in Warcaster, if you put that gate there, A, it's really hard to kill a gate. B, even if the stuff comes out of it, you're just like, well, maybe. And let's just say you summon a squad and then it immediately dies. Right? Cool, you can then bring that back for the low price of 2 arc. Again.
Yeah, well, like, there's also, like, oh, I put my gate in a really dumb position and my opponent got to it and actually bashed it into submission and knocked all the arc back into my well. Well, I guess I'll hit him with 2 giant cipher cards.
Yes.
Like, two giant furies to punish him for that. Like, you've always got an out. You can make bad decisions, but it never means that you're completely knocked out of the game.
Yeah,
which is cool.
This is an aspect of the fact that, again, when models die in Warcaster, they go back to basically your reserves, and you can summon them again. Now, this is like where it gets. This is where a lot of things start happening because, like in War Machine is a game about clean measurements, oftentimes. Even if you've noticed how I play games, sometimes clean measurements involve knocking over half your models. Okay, we've all been there, no shaming.
Quote unquote precision play.
Precision gaming. Well, in Warcaster, it's sort of baked in as just like, yeah, whatever, on a lot of measurements because, like, if your Warjack is just in and just gets charged and just gets shot, like, we'll put even a bigger perspective. A Colossal, right? Like, you're playing a Colossal, and it is just in on that threat range, and your opponent just manages to get it in using some kind of convoluted movement trick, and you lose it, you're losing at least a quarter of your list. In Warcaster, you're losing a bunch of turns worth of effort, and it might cost you, but the game is going longer, and that Jack may show up again, right?
You lose opportunity.
Yeah.
But it does, but it's not taken away forever. You just lose, like, that one opportunity, but it opens more opportunities for you later.
Indeed. Yeah, you never really lose models. You only lose opportunity cost.
Yeah.
With the exception of heroes, which we haven't mentioned yet, the game does allow you to take one free hero in a skirmish level and three free heroes in a larger game, which then those models, if they die forever.
Yeah.
Because they're named special characters.
And all of the heroes so far, I've had thoughts, like when I saw the rules originally for each of them, I thought some of them were very good, some were very bad. And it's almost interesting how much my opinion on them has flipped almost a complete inverse. Artemis Fang, I originally thought was terrible. I keep seeing her on the table and she keeps absolutely wrecking half my shit.
Or she dies immediately because you know if she doesn't, she'll wreck half your shit.
Yeah.
Correct.
Why and she is that? A glass cannon, which is fair.
Yes.
When I've originally looked at his stats, I'm like, Justicar Boss is literally the best model. There is nothing as good as Justicar Boss. And every single time I play him, he feels like a fat kid at a playground who can't keep up with anyone.
Yeah, because no one wants everyone wants to run away from him because he's just
He will never attack anything of value. He's always just running around going like, guys, I brought two swords. Come on.
Arianne, that's exactly how I feel about the melee Duskwolf. He like gets on the table like, yeah, boy. And then he's like, oh, where is everybody going?
But that's okay because like, guess how much it costs to summon Justicar Voss? Is your guess
very expensive.
You mean one arc? You're just like, one arc for everyone to run away from the zone. You're just like, well, that's okay. I guess we're fine with it. Justicar Voss just hanging out behind a building, looking at the flag, just go like, come on, come on, come on. I'm waiting.
I really hope somebody comes here. Yeah, hiring heroes does often just feel like a ShamWow commercial where you're just getting more and more free value.
Yes.
And now I forgot what I was going to say. It doesn't matter. Plus, the interesting thing is, now that we're seeing Faction 4 Empyreans, we're able to get actual choices in which heroes we're able to take because every faction will be getting one new hero.
Yeah, at least it's going to be really interesting. And that's part of the, like, that's a good transition. Thank you, Brian. You're good at podcasting.
Yeah!
I think he's a podcasting superstar.
I succeed.
Because I think the thing which I really want to move into, like, in our conversation is the things that we like, the things that I and we really like about Warcaster, and the things which I think will be improved with more releases and more time. Yes. Because I think what's really important to note is that with all this hype, with all of this thing, which we are definitely not being paid by MPP for. This is like Mark One when you've cracked open the rulebook, you've looked at the Butcher of Cardiff, you've added like the two units that you own, and you play a scenario from the rulebook.
Yeah.
Here is my Juggernaut, here is my Destroyer, here is my Winter Guard, and here is Dominic Joe. Okay, now what do?
Yeah, so like nobody plays with the scenarios in the rulebook, even in Mark Three, because they're kind of garbage. So like, This fairly glowing review has come with like the barest of bones. But yeah, so to transition into that, I think one of the big things I really like about Warcaster as opposed to other games is I really like that it's a smaller game, but it's not Malifaux small.
Yeah, I agree. I actually think that this is might be like any okay. First things first, I don't think in general I like a lot of skirmish games apart from something like, say, Mordheim. And the things you like about Mordheim or like Malifaux are more the customization stuff. It's like building a crew is fun. Having a guy with a rifle eventually become a hero and then eventually get a Hochland long rifle and then shoot people in the face, like that's more fun. It's great.
One of Well, just very quick. You've mentioned Mordheim, which means I have to tell my favorite Mordheim story, is a friend of mine had. He was playing Skaven. It was the first time he'd ever played Mordheim. He deployed his Skaven leader and his Skaven second in command, who he'd named Trustworthy. The first dice roll he ever did, his Skaven leader completely by accident fell off the tower to his death, making Trustworthy in charge.
Oh, how apropos.
I remember having a
dwarf in Grommel armor successfully jump across a building and basically decapitate the leader of a Shadow Elf army. I'm like, you'll never see this coming.
But Malifaux is a very different experience. Like the really fun parts of Malifaux as a skirmish game is how like complicated and crunchy every model is. There's so much going on, and there's so many really deep, interesting parts to every model. So that's what makes it interesting. Warcaster has cut down on the models. Like squads are maximum 3, and with ISA you can bring attachments. So you've got a maximum size of 4 for a squad, which is 1, great for painting, because, man, fuck painting uniforms. Yeah. But 2, it's like there's not many models, but all the models are still simple. And the strategy doesn't come from the complexity of the models.
Yeah, they also feel quite impactful, like, as models go. Like, your random ISA infantry mans are, like, when you arc them up, they're able to punch and shoot. They just go in, and they're just like a fucking hit squad of murder mans, and it just feels sick. And then, by contrast, when you have, like, say, your Marcher Worlds, like, unit of rangers, and you're going in and like, all right, I'm going to do this convoluted plan to get them into range to throw a bunch of null detonators to get all the focus off of something. And it just feels good, right? But realistically, these are like 3 dudes versus 3 dudes. And it's your basic squad. Hell, even if we go Eternius Continuum, if you have any sneaky plan to get your Eternius Continuum vassal guys onto a heavy and then chop it up. Because those guys, those buzzsaws are no joke.
Yeah, they're very high power in this game.
Yeah,
like they have the same power.
Yeah, they're the same power as my fusion glaive on my light, which is monstrous.
Yes. Turns out chainsaws hurt.
Yeah, fusion chainsaws.
They're good at disassembling things, like your army and your warlocks.
Yeah, so even in the full battle mode, you have 15 choices, which generally means you're going to average out at about 30-ish models for your list, which is
not a lot.
It's minuscule compared to a lot of War Machine lists.
Right.
And the models don't feel unimpactful, which is great.
I'm going to say one thing. One of the things that, like, I was already excited for Warcaster, but one of the things that sold me was actually watching a Battlebox game between, I think it was you and Brian, or it would have been you and Phil. Either way, it was, like, literally the first time, and I wasn't even playing it, I was watching it. Like, this might be the first time, I thought to myself, where I've watched a Battlebox game which has had legitimate tactics and feels like a good representation of the full experience. Because it, practically speaking, is. The only difference is sort of how scenario scoring works and the amount of things you got. But, like, we were still seeing a lot of shit going on, right?
Yeah, and it was still like a full aspect. Playing a Battlebox game which was fun and interesting.
And I'd do it again.
Yeah, what the actual fuck?
Everyone's gone through, like, their thing, their community building, like, public community service, where they feel like, okay, I'm going to give the Battlebox game to the newbie. In Warcaster, the Battlebox game might be better sometimes than some of the games you've had to play, and it will be rewarding and fresh.
One of the things I really do like about this game is it's fun at every scale.
Yeah.
Where War Machine, I find, you lose a lot going down to 30. I've played more 30-point games lately than I have at all. I mean, 50-point games. 35 was Mark II.
Showing your age there.
Yeah, right? The 50-point level has some skill and tactics, but you can feel like the game is not balanced at that level. You feel it, where in Warcaster, you do get a different feel to the game, but it still feels fun, refreshing, and interesting, and it doesn't feel like it's totally not in the right place. Heavies are a bit strong, but overall, I think, like, that's not too hard to fix. Plus, they're hard to bring out.
Things just change around. Like, support models become less useful in smaller games, almost like that's a thing in general. But even then, like, half the support models, like the combat engineer, for instance, has, like, a flamethrower torch.
Oh, like, he has a beam weapon. It's not a flamethrower. It's not a spray.
That's a spray? Wasn't it a spray?
It's not a spray.
Oh, it's not a spray, right. Which has it? I think it's one of the Weavers, then. Oh. Anyway,
Continuum Weaver has a spray.
Oh, that guy's a fucking beast, incidentally. That guy.
And it also is one of the coolest damn models.
Yes.
Both the male and the female. Mm. Actually, that's a random little thing. I know it's probably a small thing, but like something I personally really, really like about Warcaster is that so they've added the promo models for the male-female versions of the solos, and the differences aren't like it's not the exaggerated style that Privateer Press has done in War Machine. The male ones are a little more robust and a little bigger, but mostly that's it. There's no battle heels, which is really nice. It's a really nice
there's no cleavage and like busty bikini armor, with the exception of like the new Khan exclusive model.
Yeah,
but I can forgive that a little bit. And whatever.
Yeah, I can forgive it a little bit, but it was very nice to see that they have toned down on a lot of the battle heels and have just gone like, here's the male model, here's the female model. They are functionally the same, but they are a little bit different. So they've managed to capture just the right the right sort of balance in that sort of sense. Mm. Something which we have neglected to mention this entire time, which I really like about Warcaster, is that Warjacks are there's no standardization. They just have different builds of different weapons and cortexes, which you get to mix and match.
In most cases, you see lights with like three different optional hardpoints, which you can exchange the weapons on them for. And heavies, I think, have four. There are exceptions here and there, but for the most part, it's three and four. And it gives you a lot of...
And more importantly, I think this is the thing, there is no optimal build. Like, because there's enough custom, like, it's always, like, great to say, here's some customization, like, cool. Your customization just means that there's, like, one optimal build. No. Between the fact that you've got different cortex types, which completely change how the jacks even function, and you've got a lot of different equivalent choice of weapons, and they're decently well-balanced against each other, you get a lot of different flexibility with how you build. Like, the simple fact is, like, it might eventually start homogenizing more, but is it really going to when, like, there's reasons why all of these different jacks are different? Like, easy examples, like, say, the Duskwolf from the Marcher Worlds, right? Obviously speaking, one of the builds is going to send around the Punch Cortex, because it's the fucking Punch Cortex. Give him his rippers and go. But then you've got four different ones, and they're all pretty valid. Like, what was it? Even before the cast, we were talking about a Neuronet Cortex with double flamethrower just for maximum defense. Because in this game, if you're on fire, you're less good at hitting, because apparently you can't attack people when on fire.
Well, ninjas can't hurt you.
One less to hit, I think.
Ninjas, well, one less to hit when they're on fire.
Yeah, so like the reason I was thinking of that and think that might actually be a viable strategy is just because often the big thing you want with the Duskwolf is that one of his cortices, is about ignoring cover. But if you have two sprays, you always ignore cover. And sprays are goddamn excellent in this game, as they are in most games. And so you can, instead of bringing the no cover cortex, you can bring the one which makes him far harder to kill. And all of a sudden, you've now created a new Duskwolf variant, which does similar things to the original, but in a very different way. So you can bring one which ignores cover and then brings like two battle rifles and a railgun. And so its big thing is it's going to like pick a spot and then it's just going to start nailing things from like 16 to 18 inches away, ignoring cover. It's a little monster, that thing. And then you can bring
one from a mile away.
Yeah. Or you can bring the double spray one, which is also going to be ignoring cover again, but is also far harder to kill because his stats are better and he's setting all your shit on fire.
Need to make the optimal build of a Duskwolf. Like, it's not like War Machine where, realistically speaking, a good chunk of, like, making lists is getting the right mix of jacks. Again, you're not deploying every jack on the table. So, for instance, you could take that railgun double battle rifle build And change the Cortex for a Pathfinder one, or do the same with the Flamethrower, actually. That would probably make more sense.
The no cover is the Pathfinder one. That's the two rules you get.
Right. Fair enough.
You get the one that gives it plus range?
Yeah, yeah. That's the one for the rifle and two railguns. The reason I say is that sometimes you just want the less optimal one, but because you want access to a jack with Pathfinder. Because I noticed that. I played a game against Arian where it was going well, except that the only model I had to ignore, like, forests, was actually my heavy. And it turns out you can only activate your heavy once, unless you cheat. And by cheat, I mean use a cipher card.
No, right? Or your engineer. Marchers has lots of ways to cheat their heavies.
Correct. I agree. But again, like, this is all, like, set up and effort. And at this point, guess what? It's, again, coming down to that other problem on the table. It's like, the heavy can only really stand in one spot. And sometimes, I don't want that spot to be in the middle of nowhere. I want that spot to be near the fucking objective he's trying to stop Arian from stealing. Right? Mm. And I'm just like, well, fuck, my Duskwolf's like, I've got Malie McMillison, the most punchiest dude in town. And by God, like, I think it was against you, Brian, I made a, like, Duskwolf do, like, 8 attacks or something and, like, squad wipe and kill a heavy. And I'm like, this is amazing. And then I'm like, but I can't go through a forest because I don't have, like, I forgot to bring one of those because I was too focused on murdering people.
And but you again, didn't have the cipher card you needed.
Well, forests are a little less harsh in this game than a War Machine. It's only minus 2 to your total movement rather than half speed through the whole way.
I agree.
Yeah. That's really nice as well. It's so easy. Like, movement is so easy in Warcaster, which is really nice.
It's hilarious. It's like, the squad movement, it's just... I love whoever decided to stick with that because it's utterly funny. It's just like, you move one guy and they're like, all right, everyone just teleport within 2. It's fine. And he's in, like, you mean... completely within 2, and he goes like, no, just within 2 is good.
I did the maths today. A unit of Marcher Worlds, I was like, how far away can a Marcher Worlds fire team contest in one activation? And it was like, walk, slip displacer, and then use the cipher card for another slip displacer, and it's roughly like 21.5 inches.
Whee!
Like,
yeah, and like...
because it's Leapfrog.
Yes.
Yes.
In a normal game, that'd be like, if in a game where you don't have resurrection and stuff, or like, you know, this whole thing built into it, that's ridiculous. Like, what kind of threat range is that on a basic squad of infantry? You actually have quite good weapons, especially with their grenades that strip arc. You're just like, we can't allow this. Like, could you allow something like a War Machine? You're like, no, this is fucking ridiculous. In this game, you're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. if I wanted them dead, they are already dead.
Yes.
And they can move wherever they want. Literally, the issue wasn't that they could move 21 inches. The issue for me was that they can contest 21 inches.
Mm-hmm.
It sucks that Continuum are armor 2, but boy, oh boy, do Marcher models just die to whatever touches them.
Yeah, like if you want something to die, it's really hard for them to not die.
Like, heavies and lights and occasional solos are the exception, but like squads are just... gone.
Yeah.
Although,
that's a Titanfall experience I was going to mention was basically like, your guys just like, they are dead men walking. They're in an FPS combat zone and there's a whole bunch of scary shit out there. They're not, you know, sorry, Billy.
They are chaff.
Yes.
Last night, Brian and I, one of the last things Brian was trying to contest one of my scenario zones, he brought his Marcher Worlds Rocket Squad. And he gave them 2 shots each, which in general would mean that they'd annihilate roughly every infantryman in the fucking universe.
Yes.
But I had a squad of annihilators, paladin annihilators. They get +1 armor versus rockets, which is great, goes from 3 to 4. They had Plexus Densifier on them, which is a cipher card, which meant they were armor 6. And they also had an Aegis on them, which meant that they were also in cover, even though they were standing in the open.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched as 5 of those rockets managed to bounce off the chests of these brave men. And the last one managed to nail one of them.
Which allowed me to contest in the end.
Which allowed made him valiantly lose by 1.
Wait, you lost by 1 or he lost by
1? I lost by 1. Problem was, he scored early in the game, and then every turn after that, we both scored the same amount.
So in the end,
it became a loss by 1.
I guess this, like, talk about scenario probably gets us into the complaint we had about Warcaster, or rather the one you guys were going to bring up, which I think also is, like, again, it's like, complaint is like a weird word, because the simple fact is this game is new, but also this game is like, it should be known, the game is a scenario game, right? Like, we've taken attrition off the table. You basically can't wipe someone off the table in a functional way, right? And yeah, I'd like to hope that the game stays that way, right? Like, I don't want the game to suddenly be like, no, actually, attrition's back on. Let's go murder, 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 because, like, then at that point, like, why are we playing this game, right? There's the unique stuff is the fact that attrition doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly.
So a lot of it comes down to, like, how the scenario pack works. And as you said earlier, it's like, you don't play with the rulebook scenarios in general with, like, War Machine, so you probably don't really want to do that in Warcaster as well, but for the time being, that's kind of what we're going to be dealing with, but I think we'll be able to get something better sooner or later.
Yeah, so, like, that is part of the compliment sandwich, where, like, I have serious issues with some of the scenarios. A lot of them are fine. The one Joe Brian and I played last night might be the worst scenario I've ever played in any game.
So
ever.
Bad. Game was fun regardless, but, like, the whole time me and Arian would just look at the scenario, shake our heads, moan with disgruntlement, and then just move on and enjoy, like, the actual gameplay. But, God, yeah. Just looking at the scenario gave me, like, an aneurysm.
Let me find which one it is, just to warn everybody. The one we played was... Oh, God.
Great fucking radio. It's the one which is basically, like, incursion-ish.
Kind of. So what you have is you have two flags in one player's back table area.
Uncertainty principle.
Oh, God. And
it's
so then you have...
uncertainty principle. You have two flags on your side. There's two flags in the middle, and there's two flags on the opponent's side. They're numbered 1 to 6 in a spiral. And at the end of turn one, two of them disappear on a d6. At the end of turn two, one of them disappears. And, like, just if you just look at how it's set up and think about two of them disappearing, 99%, one of these players is getting absolutely fucked.
Like, it's absolutely, like... And so the first time it was like, okay, the middle ones, which I had absolute domination over at that point. Like, I had my immortal, like, Dusk Wolves sitting in the middle of the table just contesting pretty much anybody who came near and making it... And I was slowly scoring them. Arian had his side of the table completely covered, and I had made a mistake early and didn't score one of my back ones, which was a total fuck-up. But, you know, we'll move on from that. But then those middle ones disappear. I'm not properly scoring one of my back ones, which Arian then used as a way to get his models in there. And, God, it was just so fucking bad after that.
Yeah, we looked at the table, and what it was that we had four objectives, two on each side, and there were 28 inches between them.
Yeah. That's a lot of fucking distance, even for,
a
like...
A monstrous level of distance.
Yeah.
And with the way the game was going, if one of my table side had gone away at the end of Pulse Round 2, like, that probably would have been game right there.
Yeah. So, uncertainty principle, do not play. There is actually one scenario which I quite like, which is very similar to it, which if you're playing uncertainty principle, you should always play. There is orders of magnitude.
Always play uncertainty principle.
Orders of magnitude, where there's a ring of scenario zones, and, like, the random ones will disappear still, which I'm not opposed to, but what happens is that your one on your side will disappear, and a corresponding one on the opponent's side will disappear as well.
Yeah.
Which is a,
like,
much better balanced version.
The equivalent of War Machine would be playing, like, say, Bonkers, and then having one of the player's zones disappear and be like, all right, we can still play the game. You're just like, what the actual fuck?
Yeah. The scenarios, the book scenarios are not balanced. We will need a tournament pack to work this out. And I feel like there is some issues, because it's not just that the scenarios are balanced, but because it's an I go, you go system. And because a lot of scoring happens at the end of every single turn, the player going second has an incredible advantage. If I had to put it into mathematics terms, I would be really surprised if going second did not, like, if people going second didn't win, like, 65% games at least. Going second is so strong, especially if you're playing a faster faction like Martial Worlds. Because, like I said, you can contest so far that, like, oh, I left one of the Martial Worlds squad guys within 21 inches of my scenario. Guess I'm not scoring.
Well, I mean, it's funny you say that, because when you think about it in War Machine, right, going second is a scenario advantage in a lot of cases if the game goes to turn seven. Well, guess what happens in Warcaster?
In literally every game, because you have to play it that way.
Yes.
So there are fixes to that, and I hope that they consider it. What I read today, which I really quite like the sound of, is that you score at the end of your pulse round.
Ah, I see. Yeah.
Which then means that if you're going first, you can clear out the zones and score them, which means that more scoring will happen because the second player could then kill your stuff and score the same zone. But at least going first is not monstrously disadvantaged.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I go back to what Chris said about War Machine scenarios and going second?
Yep.
Because I don't think it's the same, because even if you get to turn seven, the way that War Machine and the Warway game Warcaster works is Warcaster, you never actually lose models. Where War Machine, the longer a game goes on, and if you're going second, you probably have less models on the table than your opponent in a lot of cases, because they've had more turns to play the attrition game, which means you have less things to stop them from scoring or to actually score yourself.
Sort of. I mean, it was more of a generic example, because you also, I mean, while true, you also do have more scoring rounds you control, with the fact that you get to score first on second player's second turn.
I find that's not as strong as going first in War Machine.
Of course. But again, that's the aspect. It's like you get more turns of attrition, whereas in this one, well, you kind of don't, right?
So yeah, that is something which I very much... I have full confidence that they will find a way to fix it, just to... But it is not in the game currently. So
Original War Machine was fucking ridiculous when you had games of P-Kane versus P-Vlad, which never ended, because neither player could kill each other. Right? And you're just like, well, this is ridiculous. And we haven't, stopped playing War Machine because of the nefarious P-Kane and P-Vlad matchups.
Yeah, right? that meta, which we're all dreading.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that meta was long vanquished by, the scenario pack.
Yeah. So it's a major complaint, and it is a thing. If you're getting into Warcaster right now, I will say scenario is inherently unbalanced. Now, I will also say that pretty much every game I've played so far has been close, which is still good. It means that there is an inherent imbalance, but there's not one that can not be remedied by a good play. But I still think it is still tilted too much in one direction. It's kind of like if I'm playing ISA, which is the slowest of the three factions, which makes it you're far more of the sort of person where you're like, here's the scenario zones which I have to hold on. If I hold on to these for the rest of the game, I can win this. If you're playing that slow faction and you're behind at the end of turn one and two, or two, probably don't play turn three. It's almost impossible to get to it because the contesting powers of March of Worlds and then to a lesser extent but still existing Eternia's Continuum are just far too strong. But then on the other hand, I'm not saying woe is ISA, but that is just a thing to keep in mind. Please, PP, please buff my faction.
You do have the least movement shenanigans so far, but we'll have to see what the jetbike does because it feels like it's a speed machine.
Correct.
When you say what the jackbike does, do you mean rather what it does on the table or what it does to my heart and soul, Brian?
The first one.
God, I love that model so much and I need it. scenario inherently imbalanced, but also it's a rulebook scenario, so I can understand that.
I guess one actual problem, and we'll use the quotes on this one because I'm not sure is that, but it is sort of a problem, is the game always does go the full three pulse rounds, and that means it can't end early, which sometimes is not to people's liking. It's just obviously not, I'm gonna say, the biggest of complaints, but it is technically a problem that can exist.
I'm really curious to see what happens when people really start to come to grips with being able to play it. People are talking about how long it takes, and part of that is new game. Part of that is because of COVID, meaning that most people are playing online.
That is shipping issues. We're talking about this cast. I was originally going to release this cast when we actually got our models, but eventually we just said, screw it, right? Let's just do it now, right? Because who knows when that will happen. That's like, we're all in Australia. That's just an Australian problem. God knows I've heard enough about the Europeans and can sympathize, honestly. Like, we've got similar but slightly better distribution issues here. And even in America, I'm sure, like, it'd be bad in its own way. But all that said, the game itself, right, I think can speak for how well it is. Like,
When we get models, I would love to get Brian to crack out the cameras and maybe do a commentated battle report. I think that would be
fun. Boy, especially if they're painted.
Especially so, but we'll see about that.
Well, again, like, one of the things is, like, is less models to paint, right? Like, I'm presently, like, painting one of your entire faction is just so much easier than just painting War Machine.
Because, well, it's like it's painting an army in War Machine rather than painting a faction in War Machine.
Yeah.
Like, your faction is, like, less than the size of a War Machine army, and you need two of those.
there will be an issue when releases start to catch up with the War Machine SKU bloat. But that problem has been solved once and for all.
Well, they might do different way. They might have their own way of solving that. Like,
yeah, maybe. But look, even if you want to focus on SKU bloat in War Machine, that game's been out for, like, a lot of time. It's not something
15 years almost.
Yeah. Something like that. Like, I look forward to us doing a cast in 15 years where we complain about how there's too much SKU in Warcaster and how, like, light jack spam is just too damn problematic because they cracked and made a light jack that's capable of laying down gates. Like, the fucking Eternius Continuum solos are so fucking busted, like they've always been. And other kind of random janky stuff.
15 years later, Marauder is still OP.
I do love, so for reference, right, I do, like, one of the ways the activations work is you could activate a unit, which can be anything, and then a solo. I do love, like, one of the best openings as Eternius Continuum is, like, you basically, the first gate you throw down of five, you have four Marauders jump out and a Grifter. It's utterly hilarious. Actually,
it's probably better if it's Raxus, but yeah, still the same thing. It's just like, you just have four of these.
No. Raxus starts on the table, so you have six cards to draw.
True.
Yep.
I still can't tell if I love Raxus's model or hate Raxus's model.
I don't know. I can't believe they made another Syntharion. I mean, that was not a model I expected to ever see, like, another one of.
Yeah.
He's just Dark Syntharion, the Ribbon Man.
He actually literally looks like that sarcophagus Pokemon.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah.
While we're on the critiques thing, something I do think that there are some weapons, cortexes, ciphers, and units that just are not very well balanced yet. And I, again, early game, fully understand it. And understandable. And the fact is that because of the world we live in, I can see how they could just update models. Like, they do it with CID, they do it through other methods. It's not particularly hard. So a model being bad is not the end. And especially since the way that jacks work, because you build them at the table, like, they don't have to change every jack card. If they, like, buff sun piercers, they just replace the sun piercer card.
Yes.
So, like, there are some weapons and cortexes which are just flat out worse than their other things, or only better in very unlikely situations. There's a couple of cipher cards which I just don't think are going to really ever see play. Like, one of them brings one guy back to the unit if it died, and, like,
doing that and it never works. It's like, either my unit's dead or it's like, why do I bother bringing a single guy back when I could, like, throw a fury out or make my jack make everything else plus two defense or, like, a billion other abilities.
You'd actually almost rather the card that allows you to pull your squad, that squad off the table so you can just resummon the full deal. I think that one's probably going to come with age. Like, this might be one of those things where unit bloat starts happening where, like, because the way the rules work is effectively you can put attachments on squads. And I believe the cap is based on how many arc you use to summon said squad. But I wouldn't be surprised, like, a squad of, like, seven show up randomly, and you're just like, all right, we're going to specifically revive the one guy that matters. But,
That card specifically says you can't revive attachments.
Oh, what a piece of shit card, then. Never mind.
Yeah, no, it's, like, if it revives two, I'd be fine with it. Reviving one just isn't worth it. Like, so there are a lot of little cards. There's one of them which gives like a squad the ability to a unit the ability to ignore stealth for a pulse round. I don't see the point. Stealth is 8 inches. Yeah, it's not great.
If you're playing ISA, that doesn't matter. If you're playing marches with your 16-inch range battle rifles, that's actually pretty decent.
Yeah, but you're so far that you just walk into it. Like, it's not... stealth has not been a hugely relevant rule to me so far.
Fair enough. Maybe I just don't want to get fucking, like, you know... Maybe I don't want to walk that far. Maybe I need to be someplace else. But, yeah.
Most of the models who have stealth so far have such short range on their own weapons that if they're, like... You're just going to be able to kill them. It's not a huge deal. Stealth is a bit of a weak rule currently. It's pretty good on Wojtek because he has it all the time. The AC squads have stealth when they're charged, which is such an investment for a squad.
As good as the other guys being charged. Like, plus four range is very useful on the... And targeter is fucking disgusting, and ignoring cover is a good rule, and it's just not... it doesn't stack up as well.
Just an important note. I wasn't going to go too deep into any deep cuts about strategy on this cast, but for love of God, Marcher Worlds people, even versus ISA, take those rocket guys. They are so
Will occasionally just roll the four on the blast, and the main shot is usually strong enough to kill a guy at armor four. Like, it's silly not to take them.
Yeah, they are so damn good.
Because you get to reroll, it's super likely that you'll hit whatever you're shooting at.
Well, yeah,
it's funny because I actually didn't really rate them that much, but that's because I was comparing them more to the fucking like Paladin squad with guns. Those guys are fucking badass.
Chris, on paper they look like shit. On the table they just like end the world. They're so good. Like it took defense 3 in cover armor 6 Paladin squads to not die.
Yeah,
all right. They are, and not to mention all the Paladin squads that died to them
just on directly the turn hitting them, right? Like,
All right. So yeah, those rocket dudes, because like you're like, okay, I'm gonna target that guy, and like you roll the hit, you roll the defense, and you're like, oh no, I didn't roll enough to hit. Well, I'm gonna re-roll it, and like let's say the worst case scenario happens and you miss again. Oh well, I guess I get to roll blast damage against the guy I missed. Yeah, like you've got 3 chances to damage the guy you target.
So and you will eventually just like spike one of those.
Yeah, you will just randomly do well, and that you get a lot of opportunities for it. They're really reliable.
They give you a lot of opportunities to get lucky.
And Paladin Annihilators, they are extremely good as well. But Slip Displacer is so much better of a spike than the Paladin Annihilator spike.
I think this charge is still strong though, Arian.
Chris. Let me give you a math lesson on this. So the spike meaning that the annihilator spike means that you ignore line of sight and you ignore cover, right? Seems great. Seems really cool.
I mean, don't they ignore cover you're... baseline anyway?
Yes. Now, regular annihilator shots are great. They are the number 2 squad in my opinion, right? The reason that the spike is not as good is because then you're rolling 3 white dice versus most enemies who also have 3 white dice, and because defense beats attack when you equal it, you are missing about 30-40% of the time. Sorry, you're hitting only like 30% of the time.
Yeah, look, the issue. Okay, like we've well diverged off topic.
Yes. Like, sorry, I
was just gonna. I was just gonna finalize say like no. The reason I like the Paladin spike is that you don't usually use a lot, but the times you do use it are really critical because it's more about shooting things you can't see, like behind terrain.
Every time I've done it, it's been so annoying because I'm like, yes, I can finally see that. I can see that thing that I need to kill, but I never hit it. Yes.
Your odds are so bad, Chris. In most cases, because most things are def 3, they're rat 3, which means you're both rolling 3 white dice in the best of cases, and that means on average they win the roll because they win on ties.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Like, I still like that score.
You're right. In the niche scenario where it's going to win you a game, it's going to win you a game. The problem is that worth your spike in both? Like, is that worth the rule as a spike? Yeah, I think they need something else tacked to it, maybe, to make it a little...
I don't think it actually is hugely necessary, because, to be honest,
the squad itself is... Yeah, the squad itself is, like...
The squad is incredible, so it really doesn't need anything else. It's the but like take the rocket dudes because they still got slip displacer, which is amazing, and they've got the targeters, which is amazing, and the blast damage, which is amazing, and even versus ISA, which has extra armor versus them, it's just they still will wreck your ship.
Yeah, I love putting them on the table now.
Yeah, they're super.
And good. I'm much happier with their final sculpts.
Yeah, I agree. So like there's to go back to what I was saying before, there are some weapons like the Sun Piercer and Particle Cannon. They're both weapons which is like they're power one, but they have they get two red dice for every arc that you have instead of one, which seems really good until you actually look at the maths of it, and they are at the best case scenario, they are only a little bit better than most of their competitors while being more expensive and less range. And like it's not a big thing, but I'm very annoyed that those weapons are not as functional as they could be. I wish they had a better niche. So yeah, like that's what I hope. The AC squads I think are cool, but I don't think they're very good.
I think they suffer the problem of like they're sort of got grift attacks. I don't think the grifter's actual best use is helping them out. Like their best use is basically making like more chunky other models, like
Marauders, Raxus, and Cassius Morgrave, like the grafter increasing their armor, but that's such an annoying piece. Like, I really don't like the grafter's design. I think that needs work. If he was an attachment, he'd probably be pretty good rather than a solo. But the fact is that he needs to be activated to walk up while having no real weapons. His Spike would be useful, but then he's not charged, so he's not adding armor. And also, it's bringing back two dudes to a squad, which isn't very good. Increasing the armor from 2 to 3 is not a big deal. Increasing armor from 4 to 5 is a big deal, but it's not worth the hassle of bringing a grafter along. So, yeah, grafter, like, I really hope he gets a buff of some kind because he's a very cool concept.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, we don't know what the development plan for this game is going forward, given that it's barely even being released. And I would be very unsurprised. I mean, they've already made changes since, like, the rules have been going out. So they're yes. quite happy, it seems, to actually do make just more changes. So
yeah.
I think we'll be fine.
And, like, we know that there's going to be new Cypher cards coming, probably in the next Kickstarter, which is very cool.
I wonder, actually, if they'll rotate out Cypher cards as well, like almost like deck rotations in other card games. And I wouldn't hate nice. That, right?
No,
because you'd be like,
to be honest, I wouldn't hugely hate if they even rotated out factions eventually when Skewbloat actually matters.
Well, I mean, it's the land of 1,000 worlds. Like, instead of just doing...
there are 3 nations in thousands of worlds. Like, all right, sure.
Well, but, I mean, that's not my point. I mean, instead of, like, doing... you just do... Like, new factions are just sub-factions of the actual factions. Like, here are the introductory larger factions as a whole. Now let's look at, like, the Marcha World faction from, like, this set of planets, because they're all ice planets.
Yeah.
And you can use some Marcher stuff, but then they also bring new stuff, and that's the new Marcher faction.
Similar let's to see how, what like, happens. Infinity does it with their sectorials. Like, here's Pano.
But you still can play everything in Infinity, from my understanding. It's,
this
like,
does
I'm thinking,
sound very much like Theme Forces.
Yeah, but instead of just being Theme Forces, it replaces the old thing. Like, you cycle out models.
Yeah, sure.
We'll see if that ever happens. But look, put it this way.
That is
like,
a long way away.
That is an extreme long way away. And I think a lot of the design goals probably won't even make it so that that will happen, right? Like, we'll see how it goes, though. But for, like, its initial release and all the stuff we played of it, like, the issues we've had with the game have been issues because they stand out amidst what is otherwise just a really fucking fun product. I gotta say, in general, just something I've personally noticed is a lot of game design has just gotten better over the years. Like,
I think people have started, like, you mentioned before this, that a lot of people were just stuck in the design paradigm of following Games Workshop, which is something I definitely agree with. But also, like, people have started, game designers have started noticing not just that you don't have to suckle from GW's teeth, but you can also, there are more interesting games to copy from.
Yes.
The fact is, like, Privateer Press, when looking at Warcaster, I'm like, okay, when I originally looked at Warcaster, I'm like, so you've got the resource management from War Machine and Hordes. You've got the cards kind of from Malifaux in a way. Like, just having a little deck of cards to hold in your hands is just kind of nice and tactile.
But you've also got, like, the Magic the Gathering aspect of how the cards are played, like effectively two main phases. Like, you literally have the same kind of structure.
Yeah, so there's a lot of little pieces taken everywhere, and it's really, and it really shows, because it's a really nice product with a lot of potential. I think the biggest thing I can say about Warcaster is that the game is good now. It's inherently imbalanced in a couple of ways, but the biggest thing I can really say is that it just feels like it's holding on to a lot of potential. And I feel like they've proven that they are pretty willing and capable of putting together a good game, considering now they're really focusing on their core games of War Machine, Riot Quest, Monster Apocalypse, and now Warcaster. Because all of them are pretty damn great games.
Yeah.
Which is really nice to see. I'm glad that Private Press... I've been worried about Private Press for a while. I'm kind of glad that they've fallen on their feet a little bit now. They found their stride.
Yeah, especially given all the random crap that's been happening recently.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's
gotta love moving in warehouses in order to move it straight into like the middle of a pandemic, while you've got a downturn in the gaming industry.
But yeah, I mean, Warcaster's like last week was when the lockdown started hitting.
Yes,
and everyone, and all of a sudden the dollar plummeted.
Oh God, I still remember that. Yeah, the Australian dollar. This is not the American dollar. Fuck, I wish it was the American.
Yeah.
It was getting more expensive to do that Kickstarter literally every day. It was just like, oh.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, like, we've got problems, but the problems are far infinitely solvable. And the things that that I know I like, and I know the you two like, are core aspects of the game that are not going away, which is great. Yeah. It's a really strong foundation. The stuff that's coming out seems really interesting, and I'm really happy for it.
Personally speaking, like, one of my favorite things about this game is that I see it actually complementing War Machine and, frankly, a lot of other games I could be playing, as opposed to fighting for attention. Guess what? Like, you really only have enough room for, like, one giant-ass fantasy battler-type game, right? That's just how things are, right? Like, we can't really be expected to play both, like, War Machine, 40K, Warhammer Fantasy or Age of Sigmar, and something else, right?
Yeah.
This one, yeah, you can just slot it right on in, and it means it doesn't detract from the experience of either. Like, frankly, you could leave Warcaster and come back to it and be like, oh, actually, you don't really need to keep on top of the meta as much, because
We'll see what happens when a meta actually forms.
Yeah, because we also haven't seen Empyreans and what, like, the battle engines will do, or, releasing melee squads.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the axe commandos, like,
and the pike paladins.
Yeah,
pike paladins. Yeah, we'll see. Like, I don't think a meta can currently really form because, one, COVID, meaning that there's no real tournament play. There's no organized play pack yet, and we barely have enough to actually create a list.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much, you buy the box and you're like, well, I have a selection of decks, but your squads and solos are pretty much decided for you.
At the end of the next Kickstarter, there's going to be there'll be more heroes, so you'll actually have to make a choice, and there'll be more units, which means you'll generally have to make a choice. And once people can start actually making choices, and hopefully when people can start playing tournaments, then metas are going to start to form, and things that we didn't even consider are going to start to appear.
There'll be more unit types as
I get the also feeling that this is going to be one of those games, and this is something that does concern me a little, especially because, I mean, to put a date on this podcast, a couple of days ago, Guild Ball was announced as losing its, like, basically Steam support. No longer supported. And the reason I bring this up is, like, one of the issues that was originally, like, when it was coming out, like, this is a cool idea. It was basically an abolishment of list building. And then it was great, it was good, until you actually got to the point where you were after your tournament, you just, you know, have your first post-tournament debrief and you're talking, and then you come to the realization that all you can talk about is the game itself. You can't talk about any, like, can you make your list better? It's like, well, no, this is the most optimal, like, roster for this guild, right? Like,
yeah.
It reminds me of one of the first Gen Cons of Guild Ball, which was basically all four of the people in the semifinals, the round of four, were playing Morticians. Three of them had identical lists, and the only person who had a different one had a difference of one model.
Yeah.
Just like,
so, I understand, you know, like, that, Chris, but you're playing a game of characters, which means you can only take, like, one of each thing. Whereas Warcaster, you have your there's very, very few characters, which means you could be like, well, the only squads I want to bring are the melee squads because I just want to play melee spam marchers.
Yeah.
Granted, like, there is an innate FA of 4 on any model type.
But that means most of your stuff is melee. Like, you try and take melee Dusk Wolves, melee things. Yeah. Maybe your heavy will get a melee option.
Yeah, I agree.
You're just and then you bring some guns as support, but really your idea is, I want to play Doom Reavers in space.
Commando Doom Reavers in space. Oh god, you're playing Trencher Commandos in space. You can't fool me, Brian.
I'm just saying, it feels like because you have, there is more list building in this game, I think, than there is in...
100% more, and that's like, I said it was like an issue I had in the back of my head, but I was then going to elaborate that the thing that actually solves this a lot is the fact that even if nothing else, your Warjack customization is quite there, and there is no, at least at this point, I'd say, no optimal Jack builds. Like, there are reasons to take almost any of the guns there. As you said, like, the Sunlance, it's a bit of a shame that's the case, but that can be adjusted with points and the like. But there's a lot of a good spread of weapons in general, like railguns. Like, there's reasons to take either railgun or the fire burst gun that the Marcher Wolves have. The Blazer, that's it.
I still don't see a point of the Wildflower, but eh.
I think the Wildflower is going to be one that will surprise me eventually. I get the feeling.
It's for dabbing on Eternia's Continuum.
Yeah. God, that would be so funny too. I mean, the Wildflower if Wildflower is good meme value, I'm liking it. And plus, I like it that the fact it's the same thing as what was it? Deus Ex Human Revolution, the Typhoon. Yeah, another Typhoon. Weapon that was overhyped and yet, you know, it's just really cool.
Yeah. Although, did you ever have a playthrough where you played a Typhoon build? It is super fucking fun.
I mean, I like how they try to give you a less lethal Typhoon, and then, you know, like, in case you want to do a non-lethal takedown run, and you're just like, it's the same thing, except aren't you...
What is a Typhoon?
Typhoon is basically... Imagine if your human robot body was, in fact, had a whole bunch of claymores strapped to it, and you spun it around and did, like a breakdance, and then... You know, metal like ball bearings just landed everywhere.
Oh dear God!
Yeah.
You're like, see my torso. Get those lungs out of there. Get that stomach out. Get that heart out. Get that liver, kidney. Don't care. Replace it all with bombs.
Ball bearings as well. So it's just like you just spray it around. It was fucked. And again, like it was one of the first things that they've shown. And it's really cool. And then you're actually using it in your stealth action game is just quite hard.
Yeah. If you count every different Cortex and weapon permutation, there are already thousands of Warjacks. Like literally thousands for each faction because there's so many different options that you can pick. Currently my brain always goes into symmetry. It's just something that I quite like out of Warjacks, but eventually I'm going to break out of that, and most people will as well when they're just like, no, taking 4 different weapons is good.
Yeah.
Because I've got them for different reasons. Taking 1 Sunpiercer might not be bad because the one thing that I've been able to note is the Sunpiercer is pretty good when it shoots solos.
Yes.
That's where it's quite effective compared to others. And like eventually just like, hey, maybe bringing one of these Jack variants with the Sunpiercer. So if somebody tries to push a hero in my face and I can annihilate him with the power of the sun, like that's pretty good. So that's going to inform meta. I do disagree a little bit with Chris, and I've played a couple more games than he has. I think there are some set choices. I'm using scare quotes. But I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think there's just like ones which when you're playing the early game, this is the most obvious Jack. It's kind of like back when you started playing a faction in War Machine and there was like one character or regular Jack which you pretty much took all the time. And it would take you months or years and someone else to tell you, hey, maybe you don't have to take that Jack all the time. It's the obvious choice, which meta will inform, which meta might create a space where it's not the most obvious anymore.
Correct.
I guess
it depends also on the Jack chassis. Honestly, I have no problems at all with a whole bunch of ISA builds, which have, like, the fucking, what is your light called again? Firebrand? The Firebrand with two shields. Like, guess what? The tanker build, as we colloquially call it, because of the similarities to a Man of War tanker, it's just really cool. Like,
it is a very cool thing. I know that even though I'm going to be magnetizing my jacks, pretty much all of my Firebrands, I'm still going to glue at least one shield to them because I cannot see myself not bringing one.
Yeah, well, the jack is more designed to have a shield than not, so yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to have to convert some shields, or we're going to have to buy some more battle packs.
Yeah. God damn it.
I realize I have to buy, like, the alternate Duskwolf one, just so I have, like, because I have none of the extra weapons for that.
Need more Rippers.
No. Rippers come in the standard one. The slug guns or the impalers.
Yeah.
I believe I'm getting two of the A packs and two of the B packs, which will help.
Are we? I'll have to look at the order.
Yeah.
Oh, problem for future us, I suppose.
Anyway, but I made sure to buy extras for the heavies.
Yep.
But yeah,
double particle cannon. Yeah, boy. Yeah.
it makes me so fucking mad. I hate that gun so much. I'm going to use my explosion that's not an explosion.
Well, that's because it's a collapsing wormhole thing.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
We are similar but legally distinct from the Lollipop Guild. The Lollipop Guild.
You said particle cannon wrong.
Lollipop Guild.
We had to go a bit far to find something that wasn't technically explosion to get around your bullshit. But yes, I'm glad we did.
Marshall Worlds are OP because they bring the strongest lawyers.
Gotta stay.
That feels wrong, considering the ISA should have really good lawyers.
What? You're saying that the fascistic corporation made of seven monarchies is the evil lawyer faction? Brian, I am wounded.
Well, I mean, it could be Eternus Continuum. They probably they probably have a lot of malpractice suits.
They probably have some really good
defense lawyers.
I do like the three factions in general. Just the fact that you've got, like, basically, the main, like... If anyone's ever played not Sins of a Solar Empire, Endless Space, how, like, the primary human faction in Endless Space is, like, an evil corporate empire. And not even evil, they're just, like, morality doesn't pay. You know what pays instead of morality? Cold, hard pragmatism, a lot of cash, or dust, right? You've got a similar thing going on. You've got one faction that's literally a pyramid scheme. And then I guess you got, like, ISA, who have, like, generic space banditos.
Well, the different factions are all pretty much different variations on different sci-fi perspectives. Sure. You've got the Marchers, which kind of have a the Marchers
brown
kind
coat.
Of like a they're brown coat, but they're kind of like I'm using scare quotes again for realistic. Like they are kind of dudes holding big sci-fi cannons. You've got the ISA, which is kind of the Mirror's Edge Deus Ex, more clean, the original Deus Ex Human Revolution style clean sci-fi.
Mass Effectus.
Yeah, probably more Mass Effectus. And then you've got the hard cyberpunk AC, which is really cool. Then you've got the Imperiums coming, which have a bit of a Protoss-y kind of feel to me.
Yeah, they're the non-human alien humanoids.
Yeah.
I do like that they are very non-human as well. It's like these are like...
But they're not... They have enough things that they're like, this is not the human faction, but at the same time have enough human things where you're like, yeah, I recognize these shapes, so yeah, I can identify with them.
Yeah, I was a little bit hoping they were going to be a little more like the new Monpok faction, the things from the eighth dimension or whatever it is.
Yeah, those are cool.
Agro
I like iJudicator.
Yeah.
Yeah, the aggressive geometry.
Yes.
I mean, you could probably, if I bought into them and I could find a nice alternative, I might, like, cut the legs off the infantry and do something interesting with them, just to make them not humanoid.
I do hope that Privateer Press gets a little more permissive with their conversion policy, because, to be honest, like, I doubt they'll go to the level that I would like, where it's just, like, a free-for-all, but, like,
Yeah, there are problems with that, but continue, please.
One of the biggest things, like, the reason that we play war games over board games most of the time is that war games have a lot of variation, but they also build good community. And that's, in my opinion, why Guild Ball had such issues, because you can't talk about the game as easily, which means it's harder to build a community around the game specifically. And Chris, you always mentioned that, like, talking about Gilball away from Gilball is hard. And you want to do everything you can to build that community and make sure that you've got people who are invested in the game and being friends around the game specifically. Mm-hmm. And very permissive conversion policies. Like, I think there's nothing more, nothing that propelled GW's success over the years than saying, you can make your own chapter. You can make your own heroes. Whatever. Convert it all you want. Because that gets people invested, and they'll be, and then you get a good feedback loop where someone's like, oh yeah, I saw there's a guy who did a really cool paint scheme for his Space Marine chapter, and I'm gonna borrow that. Or like someone clipped a bunch of Skaven parts and added them to their Imperial Guard army, and I think that's rad, and I want to do something similar.
Wait.
I mean, you talk that to me literally as I'm.
Did you see the Skaven in the ISA?
No, Skaven Marshes. Yeah. Oh, no,
AC. Skaven AC. Those were cool. Yeah. And his portal tokens were just like little holes in the ground with like energy pouring out of them.
I didn't know that.
Because they like dig their way in from like their portals are just like holes in the reality.
Dig up, stupid.
Yeah.
I like it.
I would really like Privateer Press to be more permissive with their conversion policy for all of their games in general, but Warcaster, because that's the one I'm invested in right now. Because I feel like those sorts of conversion, that level of creativity really fosters a feeling of community. And the biggest fear is like, but what if people just like start buying GW models and
honestly, I kind of don't want to get into this because this is a complicated problem. And more specifically, like, I've seen the other end of it where you literally have, like, God, like the My Little Pony the Bretonians, right? Or where you have, you let's just say you just buy a bunch of generic space dudes and you say, all right, this is my Eternian Continuum list. Mm-hmm. And then the next week you come in, it's like, this is my ISA list. And it's the same army. And like, well, my conversion rules, they're the same.
My thing was that it was always IP infringement was their problem.
Something not a sandwich, right?
I always thought it was IP infringement that they were afraid of.
Maybe.
Because there are some very aggressive companies when it comes to IP.
Also, but like again, like that'd be more like if they had to put it on a thing. As I said, the conversion thing, I think they're decently lenient about it. They certainly look like they're being more.
I was just going to say Australia and Europe have just in a lot of ways stopped giving a fuck because getting models became problematic. So it was like, do what you want as long as the event organizer agrees and everyone agrees and everyone knows what you're looking at. It's fine.
Like the one thing which I want to make, clear about this is why I'm so laissez-faire on the idea of like even just like proxying whole armies. While yes, I would they should be like pretty obvious about what they're actually trying to be. The one reason why I'm quite permissive on that is to think about it, like again what makes these games live is community. And so let's say there is one guy who like. Let's say we wanted to run and we've got our friend Phil, who doesn't really like any of the factions models. What if we just told Phil, go, play whatever models you want. Like, make sure that you're using appropriate things that look like it. Adding another player means that there's more vectors for other players to come in, more people to play, the community gets more fun. So the fact is that even though you might lose out on revenue and things because some players are not going to be playing and paying as much for their models, you're going to be building the greater community more, which means that you get more exposure, which means you get more players. And most players are going to just buy the basic models because the basic models are fine and they don't want to put in that level of effort. But you catch the people who might not like what you're putting out model-wise, but you get the ones who want to play a game.
It's a complicated thing because the other issue is like, yeah, that's all great and good, but you get the people who are just willing to like exploit the rules, so to speak.
If you're talking about people who exploit the rules, if they're just being an asshole about it, then you just don't play them like they would if they were being an asshole about the rules.
Yeah, but again, then is that really committed? Then it becomes a gatekeeping and stuff. As I said, this is why I didn't really want to talk about it because it's a faceted problem.
It is, but like it's my opinion on this that I think permissive conversion helps build communities better. I think communities are better that like communities are stronger than rule sets. If you could take anything away from the success of GW despite their absolute dog shit rule sets for fucking decades, it's that building a strong community trumps rules.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think also like depends. No, we'll go with that. I think that's fine.
Yes, I win.
Sure. I don't know what you won, but you won one conversation about a sandwich being a sandwich.
I've been preparing my entire life for this conversation.
Oh my god, Chris, you have no idea. This is literally a pastime of his.
Oh my god.
If my closest friend group messenger page is the Sandwich Evaluation Society.
You literally, like, every other time I go over to his place, that conversation starts. All
right.
Somehow, at some point, it becomes a discussion of what is a sandwich. I don't know how, but we always end up there.
Is a piece of cheese a sandwich? All right, let's continue back. I think we should wrap this up, considering how we're sort of divvying off track, if all things considered.
Mm.
I mean, as much as I'd like to talk more about, like, you know, sandwiches and, like, basically, is this Krios that I'm putting together using Kador bits?
You have no intention to talk about sandwiches. You don't want to touch that subject at all.
Finally, my use... You want to wrap up gonna, this all right, well, I was going to say, finally, a use for Einfang Pikeman in Mark 3. There we go.
Yeah, you really want to wrap up this conversation, like, around with like, two things on either side. Maybe made of some sort of carbohydrate and flour.
But does it really need to be carbohydrates and or flour?
Yes.
It doesn't need to be flour, but I do believe it's...
It's two pieces of ham around a piece of cheese a sandwich.
Is the double down a sandwich?
Double down is definitely a sandwich. All right.
But the reason it's a sandwich is because you spread it, Chris.
Fuck it. We're not talking about sandwiches anymore. We're talking back about Warcaster. And speak of which, I'm singing. Does anyone want to bring up anything else before we leave this topic? And wrap up this cast.
Play Warcaster. Give it a try. Proxy it out. Hell, we haven't had our models. We've been proxying for months. Play the Battlebox game. It's legitimately a really fun Battlebox game.
Apparently, there's a good plugin on Tabletop Simulator. I can't speak for sure because I haven't seen it. But on the other hand, like Tabletop Sim has been getting really good for doing small scale battle games. Like, I mean, I played it the other day playing My Vault Crisis Core. It was fucking dope, that plugin, right? Like, I might not actually ever buy a model of Marvel Crisis Core and still play tournaments, right? I mean, it probably eventually will buy models because, you know, I don't want to be a cheapskate and some of the guys do look cool. But, like, that'd be something to look at to build it, especially while people are still in lockdown and things are a bit sketchy regarding COVID-19.
By the way, when I said go play the game, that does not apply to Americans or anyone else who lives in a plague-ridden society.
All right, so I might be seeing you next week then, I guess.
We're not in Melbourne, Chris.
Not in Melbourne, but who the fuck knows?
Melbourneites always like to say that Sydney isn't Melbourne, and I guess they're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Give it a chance. There's a lot of people who like I saw a lot of naysayers, and look, it's perfectly fine to not just want to just say, look, I don't want to look into a new game because you don't have the time or something like that. But if you have the smallest inclination, give the rules a try, because honestly, every indication seems to be that the actual gameplay is what gets people into this game, and it is legitimately extremely fun.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if there's anyone from Privateer Press listening to this, I demand Zenith rules, please.
Take facts first.
No, you've seen it. I want my Zenith rules fair. Give me Banshee rules.
I give you permission to start the next Kickstarter ASAP. It's fine. It was like two days ago.
Is the Zenith the one that is the blade on the side of a...
No,
like...
that's the side. Shut up, Chris.
All right.
This is the Imperium...
Right. You want to play Space Protoss like a Brian always would.
Yeah. I'll play Protoss. Give me Protoss.
I think color shift paints are going to look really damn good on Empyreans.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's a wrap.
Yeah, I think so.
We only went wildly off topic a little bit at the end, but that's okay.
What? Off topic? No.
Dark Guidance? Never. But no, seriously, Eren is regrettably right. Not about the sandwich thing. He can suck a dick on it. But regarding the game itself, yeah, the actual game, it's one of those ones where play the Battlebox game and see a couple of demos online and see how the game plays. Because I remember, like, the easiest way to convert someone for this game was literally actually just sitting them down and, like, not even getting them playing, just watching a game because of just, like, how it goes. There's a lot of different... And the other thing, too, is, like, because the game is a different pace as a result, like, compared to War Machine, like, it's not necessarily just about kill, kill, kill because you have tangible things you get from killing. In this one, it's a lot more slower and a bit more chess-like. And the fact that the rules measurement is kind of like, yeah, whatever, is actually quite nice. You're less about standing your certain models in the perfect spots and then faffing around for ages trying to figure out where those perfect spots are, and more about having a collection of models in roughly the right spots. And between that and the way guns work and how the game itself plays, it makes for a better gaming experience on a skirmish level, I'll say, than almost anything I've played. It's really fun.
And it's so good to just not have to worry about free strikes, not have to worry about melee ranges half the time, about, like, tricky, annoying movement stuff. It's everything is nice and easy. It's really nice to not have to worry.
It can be easy, because if your guys die, oh well. Like,
yeah.
It's War Machine is a nice, crunchy flavor that's awesome to play, and you get a lot of, like, value out of it. But sometimes you want something smooth, and that you get in Warcast. So, like, they are both excellent games, and I recommend everybody play both. And I continue to play both. But it's nice to have, like, a different flavor that has the same quality. Like, they're both quality games, but they give you nice different flavors that you wouldn't normally get from one or the other.
As I said earlier, like, it's actually... What surprises me, I think, most about Warcast is how complementary it is to War Machine.
Yeah.
Like...
I think all three games that Privateer Press, I can't say about Monster Apocalypse, but like Riot Quest, War Machine, and I almost called it Infinity, Warcaster are all really good games that you can kind of play in their own place, time, and level. Like, I could play a Riot Quest tournament, but I know exactly what I'm getting into, and it's going to be a ton of fun and a bunch of goofy bullshit. And I could play a War Machine tournament. It's going to be long, grindy, and you're going to get a lot of, like, really excellent plays. And you can play a Warcaster tournament, which is very tactical and very, like, flowing kind of progression, which is all really interesting because they all play very differently but give you really nice experiences.
Yeah. And the game only has barely come out, if you could even call it come out. Like, again, we're literally waiting on models. So I think the future for it will be good if things go well, I think they'll just continue going well for this, and I'd be curious to see how tournament packs shape up and the game develops in the future, when hopefully a lot of this stuff just blows over.
Yeah, it's a bright future. I'm really, really looking forward to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, more painted models, please. Send painted models.
I love sci-fi because fantasy always involves so much leather and steel, while sci-fi is like, fuck it, these guys are yellow, or like, fuck it, these guys are like polka dotted, or pure white, like some idiots like me are gonna paint.
I literally went out and bought a bunch of paints yesterday when I was doing that paint order, specifically so I could paint more stuff to look a bit like Crucible Guard, because I remember really doing like a nice like lock through one. CanCon.
Yeah, do it.
I'm like, you know what? That's my ISA color scheme. It's going to be something similar to that. And then I remember you pulling one out, which basically had like some, like, I think it was an Infinity scheme or something with like pink hair. I'm like, okay, I can do that.
Yeah, fuck that model. Why not? Oh, it's so good.
And let's go like...
You're playing Marchers, aren't you, Chris?
I sure am.
He fucked up, yes. He doesn't know his own faction.
Think of the ones that look like Tau models. That's what the internet says.
Look, they do look like Tau models. Just own it. Tau look good.
Yeah, I like Tau. Fuck it.
Who gives if it looks like another good game? Sorry, not a good game. Like other good models.
I personally don't see the resemblance. If anything, like I said, like I think we were saying this before, well, they're not on cast. It was like one of those things with their heavies. Like, they should have had their heavies first because a bunch of them just look really awesome. Like, the fucking Strike Raptor. Like... The Strike Raptor is actually what sold me on going to Marshall Worlds. So I'm like, yes, I want the Gundam. Give me that thing.
I've never been, like, my favorite model in this game, which doesn't even have a model yet, but it's, like, I just, like, rolling on the ground just in, like, drooling is, like, that new Imperium hero that works for Marchers. Fuck, I want him so bad.
Oh, the robot who was very cunningly concealed under a small piece of cloth.
Yeah, him. He's a boss.
Dr. Robot.
Who is he? He's not Bruce Banner. Fuck, what's Superman?
Clark Kent.
Clark Kent. Yeah, look, he is that a robot? Oh no, wait, no, it's just a guy. Yeah. Never mind.
He's wearing clothing. He's obviously not a robot, Arian.
Yeah.
Just like Clark Kent is obviously not Superman. Look, he's wearing glasses. Mm-hmm. Like, what if he took them off? Then Superman wouldn't see, Arian.
Yeah.
He can't see. And Superman obviously can see, so I don't know what you're talking about. It's just like that guy who lives in a mansion over, like, a bat-infested cave. Nah, that guy's totally normal.
No. I mean...
Bruce Wayne is, like, a totally normal capitalist man who definitely doesn't have any nocturnal adventures.
I mean, he has nocturnal adventures, but not those ones.
Yeah. He has much more normal...
He has nocturnal adventures with little boys that aren't related to Epstein.
I was going to make an Epstein joke. God damn it, you got that first.
I don't know if we want to keep that.
We need to stop now.
Abort! Stop now. All right. That was fun. Anyway, I think we're done now. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thank you all. And
good night. Give the game a go. It'll be fun. And... hopefully, actually, I will just say, I hope that there is more capacity to play this game online, especially while we are in lockdown. Sorry?
Tabletop Simulator is good. I played it. It's a good system.
Yeah, I mean, well, one of the things that's kept me involved in War Machine is basically War Table and Vassal. So the fact if TTS can pick up the slack there regarding Warcaster and give it a game, even if people don't have models or random shit just hasn't been released, then I think we're good.
Yeah.
All right. And, well, that's it for me. Anything else to add?
No, that's all good. No, thank you all.
Stop giving us a chance to speak.